Hello and welcome to Understory, Western Australia's only environmental radio show. I'm your host, Tom Wilson. Today I take you to Fremantle, where last Sunday a huge crowd came out to protest in favour of more action on climate change. Ending the show today, I have our usual segment on climate scepticism by Stephen Lewandowski. First, a bit of context for the show. On the eve of a federal election in this country, I turn to the news. What do I read? I read about a heat wave in parts of Russia previously known for their astoundingly cold temperatures. University of Texas climate scientist Michael Tobis is hazarding a guess that the Russian heat wave of 2010 is the first disaster unequivocally attributable to anthropogenic climate change. What else have we got? A massive ice shelf three times the size of Manhattan has just broken off the Arctic and floated away. And moving on, 3 weeks after the unusually heavy rains began to pour on July 12, the Pakistani floods have affected 14 million people, killed 1,600, and damaged huge swathes of agricultural land, the mainstay of their economy. And finally, I read that recent floods in China have now killed more than 1,100 people. So in the new climate us humans are producing, we can expect an increase in these kind of extreme weather events in their intensity and in their frequency. This is going to be the new normal, unless we turn things around. This is getting scary. On that note, let's go to the Fremantle Esplanade and see what's happening very locally. Here I am on the Fremantle Esplanade. Some music started up now. And it's a beautiful sunny day. I'm amongst the tall Norfolk pine trees here in front of me. There's a large map of Western Australia that's been covered in a sea of windmills. They've all little colourful windmills. They've been stuck in the grass. Big band started up and the marches have centred on this map, clustering around. Almost the size of a football oval, this map of WA. Band's coming my way, you can hear the music getting louder. And it's great to see so many people out today for this walk against warming in Fremantle, Western Australia. Walking around me with my microphone in that recording. Next, I bumped into Piers Verstegen from the Conservation Council and had a quick chat with him about what's going on. For copyright reasons, you can't hear the John Butler concert that took place on the Esplanade, but you can hear John just doing a quick sound check in the background at the end of this little excerpt. Okay, so what's actually happening here on the Fremantle Esplanade today?
Well, thousands of people are going to be coming down here today to send a clear message to politicians that we want a renewable energy future, not a future based on polluting industries and coal-fired power stations. People are going to be coming here today. They're going to be planting a sea of windmills just behind us in a map, a huge map, the shape of Western Australia, and that will be signifying people's desire to see a renewable, clean energy future for the state and to stop the new coal-fired power stations going ahead, which have been approved by the Barnett government recently.
And what gave you the idea of planting a sea of windmills in a map of Western Australia here?
Well, we just think that Western Australia has such incredible renewable energy potential, including wind. Western Australia is one of the windiest coasts in the world. And we just think it's a great visual way that members of the community can plant a windmill, they can demonstrate their personal support for renewable energy. And this will be a very visual way that politicians can realise that this is the future for Western Australia.
Okay, well, thanks very much. That was Piers Verstegen from the Conservation Council of Western Australia. Then I bumped into a friend of mine who is notorious for sending emails to all of his friends warning about the dangers of coming climate change. I thought I'd ask my friend Dave what he thought about all this. well-known local musician Dave Robertson. Can you give me a little vox pops?
Good morning, Tom Wilson.
why do you come down to the Esplanade on this lovely sunny day?
Just because of the physical reality of the situation we're in. And
what is that?
That the world is changing very rapidly, and it's to do with us. And we have to let each other know that that's the situation, and if we want a brighter future, then we need to have our voices heard.
And do you have any confidence in the outcome of the upcoming federal election on climate change?
Well, it is an issue. It's a shame that it's been sidelined to some extent, so I would like it to be a bigger issue. But we've got one guy who denies climate change, and if he gets in, it'll be a very sad day.
Okay, thanks very much. Then we had a great concert by John Butler. The man took to the stage, picked up his guitar, and basically told WA's Premier Colin Barnett that you're going the wrong way down a one-way road. In a musical style, of course. Josh Byrne from Gardening Australia also gave a great speech. And then it was back to Piers to set the scene
now
for
I
a political
that,
debate.
There's some concerning things happening in Western Australia, and Josh outlined some of those. I'm just going to tell you how it is, and as I say, it's right to be concerned. Western Australia, we're proposing, and the state government here has approved 3 new coal-fired power stations, a massive expansion in polluting coal energy in Western Australia. This is our most polluting form of energy generation that we have available to us. Instead of saying, look at the renewable energy potential we have in this state, let's exploit that, let's become an exporter of clean energy, the state is going in the opposite direction. It's expanding coal-fired power stations, it's planning a coal mine, there's a coal mine proposal, just 15 kilometres from Margaret River. Does anyone here support that? There's oil rigs proposed to be planted off Margaret River as well. Oil rigs in an area with greater marine biodiversity than the Great Barrier Reef. And we've got the Save Our Marine Life campaign here, so I encourage you to go and visit that tent as well later on, because this is a critical issue for the future of our coasts and for the future of Margaret River. So what we're facing in Western Australia, with gas proposals up in the Kimberley, extremely polluting, what we're facing is a massive expansion in polluting industries. Now, let me place that in context nationally. Nationally, there are 12 new coal-fired power stations planned on the drawing books to get up and running within the next 18 months, within the next term of government. Now, when I was in Copenhagen when the international negotiations collapsed, but I was lucky enough to get to sit in on a briefing with some of our most eminent global scientists on the issue of climate change. Now, what they said was, we need to reduce our emissions, developed countries need to reduce our emissions by 40% by 2020, 40% and 90% by 2050, if that's just to give us a 75% chance of stabilising the climate. Now, I'd like to have a better chance than 75%, but to get a 75% chance, 40% emissions reduction, that's what we need. Now, what we're hearing from both sides of politics is that 5% emissions reduction is enough for Australia. Does anyone support that? 5%. Now, let me tell you, the 12 coal-fired power stations that are planned in Australia, the 3 new coal-fired power stations that are planned in Western Australia, will lock us out of any opportunity to reach that 5% target, that pathetic 5% target. Now, the EPA in Western Australia are saying that if these polluting industries go ahead, we will see 75% increase in carbon pollution in Western Australia. This is not the future that we want. We know that Australia does not support this, does not support these polluting industries. We know from the polling, we know from the thousands of people that are turning out to walk against warming events all over Australia, and from the number of people who are turning out today, that Australia does not support this amount of pollution increase in Western Australia. And if it's allowed to go ahead, if the next federal government allows it to go ahead, we will blow our carbon budget. we will blow our opportunity to even achieve that 5% emissions reduction.
Piers then gave each of the three political parties or representatives thereof 3 minutes for a power debate, power in style, power in subject, beginning with the Honourable Chris Back, member for the Liberal Party.
Ladies and gentlemen, what a phenomenal time on a phenomenal day in a great place. But Andrew, the Deputy Mayor, the Back family arrived in 1832 in Fremantle and we've never left. So it's absolutely fantastic to be here. WA has, I will answer the question, sir. Thank you very much for asking it. WA has an enormous opportunity and we have an enormous challenge. It's not just a short-term one, it's a longer-term one. The short-term one is to make sure we have got sufficient energy to be able to meet our current needs. The middle and long-term demand is to make sure that we increase the mix. The one thing that is absolutely sure is that we have got an increased demand for energy. I say to you this, first of all, we must take the community with us on everything we do. There is no point trying to have government take action and the community take no action. Where are we fortunate in this state? We have got the mix of LNG. Thank you, Piers. I thought you said the audience was going to listen. We have got tremendous resources of LNG in the north of this state, and our biggest opportunity lies in further developing our LNG resources and making sure that extends into the mix. The second is, of course, as Piers quite rightly said, we have got tremendous access to solar, and we must be using that. And as part of our policy, it is the intention of investing $100 million a year to turn 1 million homes in Australia into solar homes over the next 20 years. That is the commitment. That is the commitment. And it will not be done along the Pink Bats Road. It will be done with the community. The next one is tidal power. Where does most of our tidal power exist? Right up in the north of the state, where we have 10 and 12 metre tides. We also, of course, have phenomenal access to hydroelectricity from the Ord. But unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we can't use it here. Is my 3 minutes up, Piers, or not?
That's it.
Is that it?
Thank you, Dr. Beck. That's the 3 minutes up, but you will get 1 minute to respond, to rebut. That's right. But if I can now ask Rachel Seward, Senator Rachel Seward for the Greens, to respond to the same question.
Thank you, everybody. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today. This always was and it always will be Aboriginal land. Well, the first things for the Greens is that we actually believe in climate change. We believe it's happening. It's happening now, and we need to act now with a very high degree of urgency. We need deep cuts, which is why the Greens are committed to a 40% reduction by 2020, with a reduction to zero by 2050. To do that, we need to start acting now, which is why we need a price on carbon now, which is why we put that to government. Which is why we've developed the Safe Climate Package of bills, which has 12, I haven't even got enough fingers, 12 bills to tackle climate change, which deal with, A, of course, no new coal-fired power stations. Hey. Which is why we have a target for renewable energies and we should be investing now, not taking money out of our renewable energy budget, which is what the government has just done. $450 million ripped out of renewable energy. That is not good enough. We need to be acting now on renewables and we have a plan for that. We need to be acting on energy efficiency and we have a plan for that. We need to be protecting our biggest carbon store, our native forests, and we have a plan for that. We cannot afford to sit around any longer. We need a price on carbon now. We need an ETS that is actually effective and is not doing deals with big business. We need an ETS that just doesn't transfer billions and billions and billions of dollars into the hands of big polluters with a target of 5%, which gets us nowhere. That money should be invested in our renewable energy industry. As Pia said, we have access to the resources of renewable energies that are second to none on this planet. And why aren't we taking those opportunities to develop hundreds of thousands of renewable energy jobs that will set us on the road to a new economy? Not one race.
Thank you, Senator Seward. I'm now going to throw to the member for Fremantle, the Honourable Melissa Park, to again answer the same question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. And I want to thank you all for coming out today to support the Walk Against Warming. And I too want to acknowledge the Noongar people as the traditional owners of this land. As we speak, Pakistan is being devastated by floods, China by landslides, Russia by fires. The people of Victoria are still coming to terms with the bushfires that happened last February, and here we are experiencing the hottest years and the driest winters on record. The predictions are for a temperature rise of 5 to 6% by the end of the century on business as usual scenarios, and that is absolute madness to think that we can continue on as we are. The Labor Party has been clear in accepting the scientific consensus on climate change, that it is caused by human activity, that it poses a present and serious danger to life on this planet. And that is why, as a government, we introduced a number of policies, such as ratifying the Kyoto Protocol, endeavouring to introduce an emissions trading scheme, which unfortunately didn't make it through the Senate, introducing a mandatory renewable energy target of 20% by 2020, and making the largest investment in renewable energy in Australia's history. And that's already producing some fantastic results, with an increase of renewable energy production just this year of 11%. There are some fantastic Fremantle companies like SunGrid, like Carnegie Wave Power, which are among the leading developers of technology for renewable energy and implementation. Carnegie has operated...
Well, I'm going to let you, the listener, decide for yourself which of these politicians won this debate. I don't think it's too hard to work out, personally. Finally, our regular segment on climate scepticism by Stephen Lewandowski. He's Australian professorial fellow at the School of Psychology at the University of Western Australia. Over to you, Steve.
Who will win the AFL Grand Final in September? No one knows, of course. Human endeavors, such as sports, markets, and marriages, are difficult to predict. Why, then, can climate scientists project global warming to the year 2100? Part of the answer is that climate, unlike football, is a physical process. And physical processes can be predicted, sometimes with incredible accuracy. For example, the next total solar eclipse visible from Perth will be on the 31st of May 2068, and it will peak at 26.7 seconds past 11:54. You can set your watch by that if you're still around in 58 years. The prediction is that accurate. But if climate is a physical process that we can forecast, why can't we now predict the weather during the grand final? The answer is fascinating because it shows that short-term uncertainty can coexist with long-term certainty. Suppose you visit the Burswood tonight and place a bet at roulette. Can anyone tell you what number is going to come up next? No. Do you know what would happen if you kept betting for the next 10 years? Yes. You'd lose a lot, and the casino would win a lot. That's why casino owners can sleep at night, despite not being able to predict the next number at roulette. They can confidently expect to turn a handsome profit at the end of the year. In much the same way, we can be confident that the climate will be considerably warmer by 2100. That long-term virtual certainty is not affected by uncertainty about the weather during the grand final, in the same way that the Burswood's profit does not depend on what happens during the next spin at roulette. In confirmation, climate scientist Wally Broker published a paper in 1975 that predicted the temperature rise by the end of the 20th century to within 1/10 of a degree. A quarter century forecast that came within 1/10 of a degree. So is there no uncertainty about climate change? There is uncertainty, but only in the way that there is uncertainty about what happens when you drive into a brick wall at 80 kilometers an hour. You might just get away with a few bruises and a concussion, but it is far more likely that you would break a leg or worse. No one, in their right mind, would drive into a brick wall because the outcome is uncertain. And no one should delay action on climate change because we don't know exactly how bad it is going to be. Whether it'll be just bad, or really bad, or unbearably bad, we know that the climate is changing and that humans are causing it, with potentially serious consequences. So anyone who says that we shouldn't act on climate change because of uncertainty is really inviting you to ride towards a brick wall at 80 kilometers an hour because it might not hurt. Are you feeling lucky? Or shouldn't we better cut emissions? For more details or to comment on this piece, visit www.skepticalscience.com, a website that discusses climate change by relying entirely on the peer-reviewed literature.
Thanks very much, Steve, and thanks for listening to Understory.
This has been an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is an independent community radio station that relies on the public for financial support. You can subscribe online at rtrfm.com.au/subscribe.